Welcome to the Convention of States Legacy Podcast, a weekly program that looks back at historic content from our archives. We hope you are educated and inspired by today's edition. Was the Constitution illegally adopted? Today we present a selection from COS University. In this unit of Gov 100, Convention of States co-founder and senior advisor Michael Ferris debunks the widespread belief that the 1787 Convention went beyond the scope of its original call. He proves that the delegates to the Philadelphia Convention acted lawfully to render the government adequate to the exigencies of the Union. You can take the full course for free by going to www.cosuniversity.com.
From the time the Constitutional Convention concluded until today, there's been a contentious allegation that it was a runaway convention and that the Constitution was illegally adopted. For example, historian Joseph Ellis, in his recent bestseller, Founding Brothers, repeats the following charges against the Constitutional Convention. Over the subsequent two centuries, critics of the Constitutional Convention have called attention to several of its more unseemly features. The convention was extra legal since its explicit mandate was to revise the Articles of Confederation, not to replace them. And second, that the machinery for ratification did not require the unanimous consent dictated by the articles themselves. There is truth in each of these allegations. These two charges are serious because they suggest that under the law existing at the time, the Constitution was actually illegally adopted. These two allegations can be summarized as follows. First, a new document was proposed rather than mere changes to the Articles of Confederation, as specified in the call of the Convention. And second, the new Constitution allowed for ratification by only 9 states, whereas the Articles of Confederation required all 13 states to approve before any changes became effective. On the surface, these two accusations are plausible. Indeed, the essentially unanimous view of historians is that the second of these charges is true. It should be noted, however, that most of these same historians believe that the ends of saving the Republic justified the means of violating the Articles' rules concerning the amendment process. However, a fresh look at historical documents and clearly established legal principles shows that both of these attacks on the integrity of the Constitution are in error. To find the truth, we have to undertake a procedural review of how we got the Constitution. At the request of Virginia, the Annapolis Convention convened with only 5 states in attendance: Virginia, Delaware, Pennsylvania, New York, and New Jersey. Interestingly, Maryland didn't attend the convention held in its own capital city. The Annapolis Convention had been called solely for the purpose of considering changes to the Articles of Confederation relative to the regulation of commerce. The delegates quickly concluded that a second convention needed to be called with broader authority and with more states in attendance. On September 14, 1786, the delegates adopted this resolution. Under this impression, your commissioners, with the most respectful deference, beg leave to suggest their unanimous conviction that it may essentially tend to advance the interests of the Union if the states by whom they have been respectfully delegated would themselves concur and use their endeavors to procure the concurrence of the other states in the appointment of commissioners to meet at Philadelphia on the second Monday in May next to take into consideration the situation of the United States, to devise such further provisions as shall appear to them necessary to render the Constitution of the federal government adequate to the exigencies of the Union, and to report such an act for that purpose to the United States in Congress assembled, and when agreed to by them and afterwards confirmed by the legislatures of every state, will effectually provide for the same. Let's notice 3 things about this resolution because it tells us a great deal about the view of the delegates about the rules for adopting changes to the National Charter. First, the Annapolis Convention delegates did not think that Congress was the body that could or should call for the Constitutional Convention. They pledged themselves to seek concurrence of their own states and the remaining states to appoint commissioners. They clearly believed that the states and not Congress had the power to call the convention. Second, the Annapolis Convention, not Congress, was the body that recommended the time and place for the convention in Philadelphia. Third, the scope of the proposed convention was to devise such further provisions as shall appear to them necessary to render the Constitution of the federal government adequate to the exigencies of the Union. Of course, the Annapolis Convention could only make recommendations on any of these issues. They had no power to call the convention, and they knew it. The critical thing to learn, however, is that all of these recommendations were being given to the states, not Congress. Congress had no power under the Articles of Confederation to call such a convention, but all people believed that the states did possess such power. The crucial question was this: how would the states respond? Prior to February 21, 1787, seven state legislatures voted to send delegates to the convention in Philadelphia on the date specified by the Annapolis Convention. These seven states named their individual delegates and agreed to the time and the place. Most importantly, the state legislatures told the delegates what their task would be. With only minor variations in wording, the delegates were told to render the federal Constitution adequate for the exigencies of the Union. The reason I mentioned February 21, 1787, was this is the date that Congress passed a resolution relating to the Constitutional Convention. Those who look at history quickly, as I once myself did on this very question, contend that Congress called the Constitutional Convention and gave the delegates their instructions in this February enactment. You already know enough to know that this isn't accurate. What did Congress say? Resolved that in the opinion of Congress, it is expedient that on the second Monday in May next, a convention of delegates who shall have been appointed by the several states be held at Philadelphia for the sole and express purpose of revising the Articles of Confederation and reporting to Congress and the several legislatures such alterations and provisions therein as shall, when agreed to in Congress and confirmed by the states, render the federal Constitution adequate to the exigencies of government and the preservation of the Union. Congress did not claim it was calling the convention. Rather, it was endorsing the convention. The resolution says it was the opinion of Congress that such a convention would be expedient. Legislative bodies don't call conventions using the word expedient. Moreover, the opinion of Congress was not so narrow as has been suggested. Congress said the sole purpose was to revise the articles. Revising can be pretty broad. It doesn't say the convention should only propose a single amendment or two. Congress also said to make such alterations and provisions that would render the federal Constitution adequate to the exigencies of the Union and the preservation of the Union. Some view the language from Congress as more limiting than the language coming from the seven states. I don't, but it really doesn't matter because Congress was not the body giving the delegates their instructions. Now, after Congress acted, five additional states voted to participate in the convention. Three of these states employed the same language as did the first seven states, language borrowed from the Annapolis Convention. Two states, New York and Massachusetts, patterned their resolutions after the language passed by Congress. But even if there's a difference between these approaches, it should be self-evident that two states could not set the agenda for all 12 states. The very best historical evidence on this subject is found in James Madison's statements in the Federalist Papers. In Federalist 40, Madison said, "The powers of the convention ought in strictness to be determined by an inspection of the commissions given to the members by their respective constituents." Madison then reviews both patterns of state appointments, the 10 states that followed the language of the Annapolis Convention and the two states that followed the language of Congress. After reviewing both versions, he concludes that the convention's actions were consistent with both sets of instructions from the states. Those who contend that the convention was called by Congress and the delegates violated their congressional instructions must also face the fact that Congress unanimously approved the work of the convention. But far more importantly, the runaway convention theory cannot withstand analysis once we look at the timeline of events and the content of the state legislative appointments giving the delegates their scope of authority to act. The convention delegates acted within the authority coming from each of their states. This brings us to the second claim that the founders acted improperly. Rather than following the Articles of Confederation's requirement that amendments be approved by Congress and then by all 13 state legislatures, the Constitution could be adopted by as few as 9 states, and the ratification would be by specially called conventions and not by the state legislatures. The language from the Annapolis Convention, the February resolution from Congress, and the delegate appointments of 10 of the states called for any proposals coming out of the convention to be approved first by Congress and then ratified by all of the states. To be very precise, this was not saying that the ratification had to follow the Articles of Confederation. Rather, the convention was called and the whole process was proceeding under the residual powers of the states. But all parties agreed that the plan for approval would be exactly the same numbers of votes required as under the Articles. The rule for voting didn't come from the Articles, but it was the same as the one found in the Articles. There's a very simple reason that this method was required. The states were sovereign entities operating in international law, and it's a basic rule of international law that no state is bound to any compact without its consent. Moreover, no state is bound to any amendment in its compact unless all the states to the treaty consent. Accordingly, the states understood at the time that the Articles of Confederation were a treaty, and that all 13 had to agree before any amendments to the treaty could be valid. Returning to the Constitutional Convention, when the delegates finished their work, they followed precisely their instructions. They sent their recommendations first to Congress. They made two recommendations. One was the recommendation for the new Constitution itself. The second was for the new method of ratification. But it's important to note that the delegates followed the pre-existing agreed procedure to seek approval for both of these recommendations. Congress unanimously approved both recommendations. And they didn't send the Constitution off to the state ratification conventions because the old process had not yet consented. Congress sent the Constitution and the recommended new process to the state legislatures. The official language read as follows: resolved unanimously that the said report with the resolutions and letter accompanying the same be transmitted to the several legislatures in order to be submitted to a convention of delegates chosen in each state by the people thereof in conformity to the resolves the convention made and provided in that case. This last clause meant that the states were being asked to approve this new process that authorized the election of delegates to ratification conventions, and that 9 ratifications would be sufficient. Thus, before any state could submit the proposed constitution to a ratification convention, its own state legislature had to first approve the new process. If all 13 state legislatures approved this change in process, then the unanimous consent rule would be satisfied. All 13 states would agree to a new process for ratification. This analysis looks at ratification as a two-step process. First, the state legislatures approve the new process. Second, the state ratification conventions approve the new constitution. 11 states held ratification conventions and approved the constitution between December 17, 1787 and July 26, 1788. The government under the constitution went into effect on March 4, 1789. It's self-evident that the legislatures of each of these states voted to approve the new process since these conventions required prior legislative approval. However, we must also consider North Carolina and Rhode Island, states which did not ratify the Constitution before it was put into operation. If North Carolina and Rhode Island had failed to approve this change in process, then the critics would be right. The Constitution would have been adopted contrary to the rules requiring all 13 states to approve the new process. But North Carolina and its legislature clearly approved the change in process. The legislature authorized the election of delegates for this express purpose. On August 2, 1788, the North Carolina Convention voted to table any further consideration of the Constitution by a vote of 183-83. The delegates attached a number of recommendations that they wanted to see adopted by a general convention before they would ratify. This was a tacit rejection of the Constitution as written. But this rejection by a convention has no bearing on the action of the legislature that had previously approved the new process. Likewise, we need to look at Rhode Island. It's generally thought that Rhode Island simply ignored the entire process until after the new government under the Constitution had already been in operation. And again, if this was true, then an allegation that there had been a technical violation of the rules would be much more tenable. However, in February 1788, the legislature of Rhode Island adopted a resolution submitting the Constitution of the United States to a vote of all the people in the state. In effect, this act appointed all the people of the entire states as delegates to the Rhode Island Ratification Convention. The people were to assemble on the fourth Monday of March in conventions in each town. These Rhode Island Ratification Conventions were different from those in any other state, but nothing in the transmittal from Congress or the convention prohibited Rhode Island from adopting this format for a ratification convention. These town conventions were held on March 24, 1788, and the Constitution was overwhelmingly rejected. The defeat was more lopsided than it might have been, since most of the Federalists boycotted the meetings. But this rejection by the Rhode Island Convention does not detract from the fact that the Rhode Island legislature approved the new process that had been suggested by the Philadelphia Convention and had been officially approved by Congress. Without this approval by the legislature, the town conventions could never have been held. Therefore, the unanimous consent rule was satisfied. Before the Constitution was agreed to, Congress and all 13 state legislatures approved a new process for changing the Articles of Confederation. By the unanimous action of all 13 state legislatures, ratification conventions were convened, an explicit approval of the new process that included the transfer of decision-making from legislatures to conventions and changed the required number from 13 to 9. However, the understanding of states as sovereign entities continued for one more step. Rhode Island and North Carolina had properly consented to the new process, but this was not the same as consenting to the new Constitution. They did not consent to the new Constitution until much later. But it's very important to note that neither state was a part of the governing union during that period. Neither state helped to elect George Washington to his first term in office. Neither state was represented in the first Congress. When they approved the Constitution, both of those things begin to happen in North Carolina and Rhode Island. What we know is that all 13 state legislatures first approved the new process. And then secondly, all 13 states eventually approved the new Constitution. This was done properly and in order and in the right sequence. The Constitution of the United States was lawfully adopted.
Thank you for listening to the Convention of States Legacy Podcast. To learn more about our grassroots movement, go to www.conventionofstates.com.